Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 75, our top 10s of 2017, coming at you right now. Howdy everybody, Portal Gaming Podcast, the podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. And for more information, as always, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal. Find us on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. We are a proud member of the Dice Tower Network as well. And I am your host, The Brant, and with me
is your co-host, Brian.
Yes, and Brian's going to kick off this show. We're actually going to have a variety of contributors, and I'll probably close out the show. So yeah, we're here to bring you our top 10 games of 2017. Of course, you know, we haven't played everything and a lot of Essen titles are coming in now and all those blah, 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 blah. And I totally get why some people don't like doing top 10s this early. But for me, I enjoy it because I just like to hear what did everybody like. And this year right. There really is a variety in all the different lists that I've heard so far. So I think that's fun. Also, if there are Essen titles that people have played and put them in their top 10s, I want to try to get them in the January to April stretch run, because then they disappear. They're so right. hard to get after that very often. So yeah. I think it's great. You know, this is the time, because some of these games go out of print, and then it's like, you know, they'll come back next year, or they'll have a Kickstarter, you know, a year down the line, but I want to play them now.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of these are, you know, what are you looking forward to, you know, playing again, or what's really become a little more ingrained in what your overall gaming experience is, you know. Yeah. So it's not like these are the 10 best games. These are just like the ones that I've played already or you've played already, you know, and we're looking forward to getting back to the table. Obviously, yeah. Some settle in as like, you know, like they're going to be in the favorite games of all time discussion. But I think like even looking back to last year or whatever, like there's a lot of fluidity to it, like without having played everything or even played everything enough.
I played Scythe more times in 2017 than I did in 2016.
Right. So like where was it on your
I don't remember where it was or if it was just out of my top 10 last year, but I've played it more times in this year or whatever 2017 than in 2016. Now it's 2018. Happy New Year, by the way. Yeah. So yeah, but that's just interesting, you know. I don't know that it massively moves up my list, but it did definitely right. a game that's going to stick around.
Yeah.
So
it's got the
and Terraforming Mars like is still my number 1. That's an evergreen to me. I can see myself playing that game in 10 years.
Right, and like I guess the support too. Like, I mean, that's got more stuff coming out, and it's, you know, it's getting better with age because of that right. additional support too, which is awesome to see. So,
cool. Well, Brian's going to start us off with a little special top 10 here. So go ahead. This is not his top 10 games. He will tell you what this is.
Yeah, no. So I went through and just after, you know, after we finished up all our sales for 2017, right? I went through the database and looked at like Time Machine sales and Portal sales and tried to figure out what the most sold games of the year were, you know? So this is all based on like, you know, quantity sold. And I did throw out, like I didn't include like some of the living card game packs or like,
oh yeah,
I wasn't as familiar with like the 40K box, big box, you know, gotcha. like stuff like that. Sure. Like there's stuff that's not going to be in there. And the exit games and the unlock games, those would like take up the first half of the list anyway. So,
well, we can at least say that they combined were solid, group yeah. sold like crazy.
Quite a bit, yeah.
I couldn't even get one of them. You were sold out right. before I could get one of them. So
and we kind of have a glut, like right at the 10 spot. It's a, what is it? It's a 6-way tie. So it's really, what, the top 15, excluding the other ones? So I'll just list them off real quick. So Arkham Horror, the card game, the base game makes a little more sense to me than the card game packs, right? So that's in there. Yahtzee, one of your favorites. Pandemic, Sticky Chameleons, Spyfall 2, and Tenzi, another one of your favorites.
Tenzi.
So those were right in at the 10 spot right there. Seven Wonders Duel was right above that, followed by Betrayal at Baldur's Gate. Let's see, the next one, Catan, which, you know, is still just going really strong. gone fishing. So that was one of the time machine entries. Like, just a classic. Oh, that like,
little yeah. fishing game. Gotcha.
That one's in there. Let's see. Coup. I'm surprised that's still got
keep selling
legs. But that's, yeah, I mean, that's such a small game.
It's
I guess
a $15 price yeah. point, $20 price point.
And people just, I guess it works for all different types of environments,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, totally. That's true.
But so, but right before that, so in the number four spot is Ticket to Ride, which, yeah, that's awesome
it's
to see.
Such a great game.
I know, that works
that's,
for
that's
everyone.
Incredible that Ticket to Ride is outselling Yahtzee.
Some of it's, like, quantities that we have in stock.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like, Yahtzee's competing with so many other games, too.
Right, right. I and think, it's such a microcosm to look at the Time Machine and the Portal
right.
compared to
yeah.
all games being sold, right?
Right. So, but I guess even more surprising to me, I mean, Mansions of Madness
wow.
is number three, which is a huge, like, that's a big box
game
that's,
too.
Like,
yeah.
yeah. That's impressive that that's just been going really strong. So that really gives some validity to like to that board game apps that are going to be coming out mm. and you know just that whole new dynamic that you know some of the publishers are exploring. So.
And that game's got great support.
Yeah,
they
yeah,
backed
they
it up now
out.
With like three or four already, right?
Yeah, a lot of like
three maybe
a couple big box I think, and then like some of the reissues of like the older packs and you know so it definitely has that support that. You know, Fantasy Flight is really, really known for. So, at least with the games that do well for them. So, number two, King Domino. I don't know how much... Yeah. yeah, that's like just... I guess the price point helps with that. And it's just such a... It's such a great game.
That's now in my list of games. When somebody says, I want to get a game this Christmas for my family, what should I get? And it's like, King of Tokyo, Ticket to Ride, Pandemic, King Domino. Like, it's right in that list now of mm-hmm. those games. Catan.
Yeah.
Like... Those games that I just rattle off the top of my head. If they then have played those and they're like, let's go to the next step, right?
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, that's a different thing. But for all the people that are just like, we want to get board games in our house. That's exactly. In fact, my copy of King Domino just came back to me post-Christmas from my cousins who I lent it to at Thanksgiving. I didn't even remember I did that. But they were like, oh, thanks. We played it. Yeah. It was great. You know, it was like, oh, perfect.
Great. Yeah.
That's exactly
what I
wanted.
And that's not like a store demo copy?
No, no, it's my copy.
No, but then, yeah. So that was number two. And number one for 2017 was Codenames. Which,
still, oh, all the
and
versions.
And it's just base
really?
Codenames.
Wow.
Yeah, if you throw in everything else, like, it would bump up even higher. But, I mean, like, the sales would be quite a bit more with everything else. But, you know, just standard Codenames was the top spot, so... That's
nice.
Still got, you know, that's another one that just works well. For
yeah,
like,
that's actually one that I should be mentioning. It's tough with kids. It's tough to
right.
mention
no,
to
yeah,
a family
yeah.
with kids. If you've got kids that are 5 and 7 and 9, like...
That's a great group,
you know,
game, but like...
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, Pictures has always been one that I've...
Yeah.
That's been closer to working with children, from my experience. But even still, it's tough to, like, to take it to that next step. But, I don't know. I feel like there's some... There's some hesitancy to like to really risk it and do like a like push the boundaries with what you can give for clues with like you know younger groups.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's like okay, I want to definitely get this one thing
right.
that I'm telling you.
Yeah.
You're gonna get it, so I'm gonna give you this, you know,
yeah.
clue that's way over the top. So that's not a bad thing, but it definitely works, you know, better as like, as you try to push that right. boundary.
The fun is in being clever.
Yeah.
But if you're too clever, then it's no fun for everybody.
Right. Where I think, like, you're always trying to push it to, like,
I love being
4 or 5. Right?
Like, this makes perfect like... sense to me.
So.
Yes, I do always.
But, yeah, no, I just thought that was interesting just to see, like, all those numbers. You know, like, what was selling and just, you know, some of it's obviously with what is in stock at the time and what we can get. And, you know, like, some stuff would have sold better if we were able to... keep it around, like if we could order it too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's
but,
a good point.
Yeah, so that was a
cool. That was no, that's fun. That's neat to
yeah.
see, and it's cool to have the others mixed in there, like to be like gone fishing.
Right, who would expect that?
That's great.
So
cool. So let's go to Brian's top 10 games of 2017. He's locking them in right here.
What?
Although no. he promised all sorts of stipulations and updates. And,
yeah. No, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out like where you were going with it too, like. Looking on Board Game Geek or whatever, there's a pretty clear designation of, like, these games are from 2017, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. I know I have, like, let's see. how many games that would make it. There are four games that would make the list that were, like, you know, released in a previous year in a different market. So I could just go through the other. I don't know.
Oh, gotcha.
I don't know what makes sense.
Whatever you want. It's your list. It's your time. However you want to do it. You can name them all. You can give what you had for a top 10, and then you can tell us the honorable mentions or the previous released in the market. Sure. Yeah.
So I'll go through the top 10 from 2017 on Board Game Geek.
Right. And I'll heckle your choices.
Yeah, I'm going to forget it in like 10 years. I wouldn't know that such and such game came out.
Yeah, that's tricky.
All right. So number 10, this is always confusing. And I probably pushed it down to number 10 from the number 9 slot just so I didn't have number 9 my number 9 slot. So number 10 is number 9, which is just like such a great... this is never going to work, but... I don't know. I think you taught me, and it just works really well for like a quick game that's got some thought to it, and you can play with like a bunch of different people too.
My only thing with number 9 is I feel, for my purposes, I feel like I need to own two copies.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, because one copy is four people.
Yeah.
I feel like I want it to play eight people. Like, I get 12 and 16 and whatever, and go to a convention and play with 100 people, and it's like playing bingo, right? Whoever wins, whatever. But, like, four is great. It's fine. I'll play it with four. But I really feel like I want this game when I have eight people.
Why wouldn't you just put it to 9? Like...
9 people?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then I would need 3 copies.
Yeah, but they should have just made it work with 9.
Oh, right. Number 9.
Just, there you go.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Anyway, that's my only thing is, like, you know, am I going to have 2 copies of this floating around at all time? But, yeah, it's super fun.
So, yeah. No, great game. Number 9. Now, my number 9
number
board
ten.
Game is Majesty for the Realm.
Oh, nice.
And that, I wasn't sure on that after a play, but, you know, it definitely got better, you know, and it plays really quickly. It's not, you know, the heaviest game by any means, but it's a fun game that you can get to the table really quickly and just, you know, just sit down, play it. We played it at, like, what,
1
in the morning?
Yeah.
And it was, like... You know, it just worked really well for it and played really quickly. So I really like Majesty for the Realm.
You know where I would put that game? I should make this list. I'm not going to make it this year, but I'll make this list at some point. Top 10 games to teach. I love teaching that game
because
it's just
playing.
So easy to teach. Or whatever. It's just that's just been a fun game.
Yeah.
Like, it's a great game at the store. Like, oh, people are sitting around. Here, play this.
Mm. The funny thing with like this sort of game... I'm always like looking at it, like after the first play even, I was like, oh, this is great. It's got all this replayability. You could play with like the other side of the cards. And like I feel like it's just gotten to the table with standard, basic,
right, yeah,
you know, it's like,
the other side.
I always love that the variability, and then that never actually gets used.
Yeah,
but
that's what you're saying.
I could see it turning the corner once it's got like some plays under the belt for like a bunch of people, and now it's changing up the dynamics there, so... So, yeah, that was Majesty for the Realm. Number 8, which, again, it wasn't going to be on here based on a couple plays, but Century Spice Road, specifically not the Golem edition.
Oh, yeah. Well, now you can play it with the new version. Did you hear the new version doesn't play with the Golem edition?
Yeah.
I don't think they ever stated that.
What?
That the Eastern Lands, Eastern Front, or whatever it's going to be called. Eastern Front's got to be a war game. Eastern...
Well, they were always trying to say... Like, they were
stating it that way.
Yeah, I thought they were pretty clear.
I
mean, but maybe it's just like...
I don't know.
This like offshoot. You know, like if you're not paying attention to it, you might not notice it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, after a few plays, like it didn't seem to be striking that right chord. And then I think we played it here, and it just... That was the game that, you know, I can see people loving and... It moved really quickly, and it was just such an easy one to sit down and have fun playing. So, yeah, I don't really know what else to say about it.
There's so many lists I've listened to that those two games are together, like just like yours.
Majesty and
8-7, 7-8, 5-4, 4-5. Like, it's amazing.
Right.
They're just right in that same wheelhouse.
Well, I haven't listened to any of those lists. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. How about the next one? Number 7, I've got Mini Rails. I know, like, a few people have that on there.
Yeah.
That one just works really well. Like, you know, it was one of those games where we played it once, and we wanted to play it right away again. So it was just, you know, Mini Rails has some depth to it that you don't expect from the look of it.
Is that going to be available in the States? Is that Devere? No. No, it's...
Yeah, I forget
remember what it is.
It's the, like, Easter Island looking guy, right? Yeah. I forget what that is. But, no, I think... I forget if there were rumblings of that being picked up by a publisher. But, yeah, no, Mini Rails just works really... Like, it's fun, it's quick,
yeah,
and it's got some depth to it. So, yeah, that was my number 7.
Cool.
Number 6 is a game from Renegade, which I don't think I had too much on here. But Ex Libris, like I think that one struck that right chord. You know, just a game that seemed to do like, you know, I don't know. Have you played enough to really...
I have, yeah.
I don't know. I'm liking it. I don't know if it's going to stay where it is, but it's one that I want to keep getting back to the table, and I think Renegade did a really good job. I know, like, there are some component issues, but besides that, like, it's a really fun game, and I think the building up your your library, just, like, that's a cool aspect that you don't really see in many... I don't know of another game that has, like, a similar sort of tableau building, but... I don't know. I really like that, and it's got like some neat player powers, and you know, like you could just play that really quickly too. So,
oh, definitely.
Yeah. So I thought.
Yeah, I love all the little meeples for all the different characters that you could be.
So. Yeah. Number 5 is Gaia Project, which, again, that one's... I feel like that can go up a bit. Just like we just got it. You know, played it a little while ago and haven't explored it, tried out like all the player powers and stuff like that. I feel like that one could bump up a bit, but I don't know. I guess there are those similarities, and Terra Mystica has been so ingrained as like, you know, this game takes some time to really get accustomed to and really enjoy it. Like I wouldn't have put Terra Mystica on my top 10 for like after the initial play of that one either. Right. So I think this one could keep going up, but I don't know, Gaia Project just has the right the right changes from Terra Mystica to make it a unique game, but like, you know, still have that same feel.
Yeah, I mean, I had said in a previous episode that I felt like at this point they are the same game to me. It feels like playing Aegis Theme with two different maps, or Concordia with two different maps, and a rule sheet.
Right.
Like, here's a different map and a rule sheet about the different map. They felt different like that, but at the end of the day, it's probably better. Like, they didn't try to destroy Terra Mystica and build this back up. They just tried to improve Terra Mystica. So, you know, looking at those tracks and everything is frustrating at first, but eventually you're just like, oh, that's way better. Now I have those tracks over, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's good, and when you're moving up, it's good. Anyway, but people heard my episode a little while ago, so I don't need
so
to.
So we won't rehash
it. Not me,
that.
It's you.
Yeah, no, but I really like Gaia Project. I think, like I said, I think that can go up, but, you know, it's at number 5 for the time being.
We'll let it slide for now, but you're going to need to play it more.
Yeah, no, I know. But then it'll displace the next one. Number 4 is Spirit Island.
Nice.
I thought that was really good. Like, I could see this dropping after, like, having some ease, like, you know, beating it a little easier after a couple plays. Mm-hmm. But Spirit Island was, like, such a surprise to me. I did not expect to like it based on the box. You open it up, and then, like, it's a really cool cooperative game that has, you know, enough changes and, again, enough variability where, you know, you can play a different game every time.
Yeah,
so,
I was so set at Dice Tower Con, like, I got it out early in the morning, and I was trying to play it, and then I had to play something with somebody else, so I gave it back, then somebody had it, you found it from somebody, I think, or whatever happened, and then we started playing, and then I had to be somewhere, I had an event I was doing, so then I had to bow out, and then I was like, how was it? And you were like, oh, no, it was really cool, and then I never got to play it there, but luckily, I managed to acquire the copy that was at Dice Tower Con, and sitting over there now, and... That's the most ironic thing to me, though, is that everybody says, oh, this game is so hard. And I think it's hard at first. It hits you with a hammer over the head at first, but then it actually gets easier. And that's my biggest negative against the game, which is not a major negative. It's still an awesome game. But just that actually, eventually, I teach it to people, and I rarely lose.
Right. Yeah, no, that's
But
not
it has
like...
ways to change the difficulty. It just becomes fiddlier.
Yeah. No, but I was not expecting much, and then it's a really solid cooperative game that, that's fun, and it's got some plastic minis.
Nice!
So,
and I can't get the expansion.
But, yeah, so that was number 4, Spirit Island. Next up, number 3 is a game that I was not expecting to work as well as it did. And it's kind of cheating. It's pretty close to another game that, you know, was actually in the top 10 sales for the year. But Codenames Duet.
Yeah.
I thought that was... I did not know how that was going to work. I remember seeing it at Dice Tower Con, like... Was it available for sale there, or was it just, like... Were they showcasing it?
I don't think CG was there.
Did someone have it? Or maybe there was... Maybe I was looking to get it.
But Josh from CGE was there. They maybe had another room.
I probably wanted to get it there, and it wasn't there. I don't know. It
doesn't sound like we're talking to each other. If you go back over that last minute, we're like having separate conversation.
I wanted to get it there.
I don't think it's cheating at all. I think it's different enough.
Yeah, but it's a really cool two-player game, and I was not expecting it to work as well as it did. And, you know, I was just playing. Like, I brought this for the first time playing with my wife. I played it while we were camping, just in a tent, you know, while it was raining, you know, so it was like we were cooped inside, and just, it just worked really well, and it's a really solid two-player game, and again, like, it's kind of working within that same sort of think space, you know, like it's still that same sort of game as Codenames, but it's a different style, and I really like it.
Cool.
So, yeah, number three was Codenames Duet. Number two is actually... I guess kind of a cheat, but the Unlock series, that one pushed into like my top 10 just because it's such a solid like escape room in a box. And I remember we played 5959 Project a few years ago, and it was like
that's
the same,
this was, right?
Yeah. I think so. It was like the beginning of it. We played it at Gen Con. We had fun, but I don't think we were expecting the same. Like I didn't think it was going to get to this point, you know, and I didn't think it was going to be as good as it ended up being, you know, which I guess is good. Like, my expectations weren't too high for it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just an awesome system, and it works really well. Like, it's that escape room feeling in a box. So
I got to play those three new ones. I haven't played them.
Yeah. But no, we played through the first three, and I just got one of the next batch to the table.
Yeah.
So.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really fun. So that's the Unlock series rather than one style.
Makes
but,
sense.
But, yeah. So, do you know what my number one is?
I should take a guess, right? Your number one game is Lisboa.
No.
Wow. So you surprise me sometimes and pick a non-Euro.
No, it's a Euro. Oh, it's in this room, too.
It's a Euro in this room. Oh, man.
This is some good.
Good idea. Three Kingdoms Redux.
No, we'll get to that. but you're not even looking at that. So, my number one game is from Karma Games.
Oh, yeah.
Clans of Caledonia. I could see this not staying, you know, staying here, but like it's one that's like I don't know what would beat it out. I guess it's maybe. We'll get to those other ones, the previous years. Like, you know, there's something that did surpass this. But I could see Gaia Project overtaking it. Unlock, I guess that's kind of cheating if they keep coming out with new games, right? The next batch might. But I guess expansions would be doing that sort of same thing. But Clans of Caledonia is just an awesome Euro game that, again, like I remember it was on Kickstarter. I backed it. I didn't know what to expect. You're always kind of guessing and hoping. Like I don't into a deep dive with the rules beforehand or anything,
right?
Like you're kind of looking at it hoping that the look and the feel match with what your expectations are, you know. So I remember getting it, playing it at the store as a two-player game, getting like three quarters of the way through and realizing we were completely playing it, you know, playing it completely wrong. We picked it back up and set it right back down, played it through and through, and you know, I've played it a bunch since, and it's been solid. I really like it, and I guess the thing that I'm concerned about with it would be the, like, repetitive nature to it. Like, if it does feel like it's the same game every time, and that's just where it could change in my list. But I think if it keeps giving me that, you know, that different feel, or people can have, like, different approaches and still come out, like, at a good level, you know, like, play different strategies and still be competitive, then, you know, like I think that'll keep it up there, you know, close to my favorite game of the year, if not my favorite game of the year.
Nice.
So
that's a solid game.
Yeah.
No, cool.
I really like that one. So
Nice. Yeah. All right, addendums, additions, honorable mentions, changes.
So a few games that would have like pushed their way onto this list. How do I do this that makes sense?
Just name them.
Yeah. So, like I said, there are four games, I guess five if you count the exit series. I would probably clump that in as like an escape room section. So that would kind of go with Unlock.
Gotcha.
So the other four games, Master of Orion, the board game.
Oh, yeah.
That would be in there. That would be number seven.
This is not because it was previously published.
It was in like a different, I don't know where to, like yeah. If I search for it in 10 years, I'm not going to see, oh, we brought it in, we got it at the store in 2017.
Gotcha.
Because, yeah. You know, it's going to be on VGG for like a different year. But I've just really enjoyed that one. It's really quick, easy. It's like, it's a fun engine building game that, you know, again, I wasn't expecting much, and then it's just worked really well for me. So that would be number seven. So I know that's kind of pushing some stuff around. Those last four would drop out, but Master of Orion, the board game, would be number seven. The one you mentioned, Three Kingdoms Redux, would actually be top four. It would be my number four.
Yep.
Just that's such a great three-player game. That's the only problem, though. Like, the three-player, for me, is not going to get to the table as often as the other ones.
Yeah.
But, and again, I haven't played it enough to really, like, do a complete dive, but I know I want to play this one again, soon. Yeah. Right ahead of that, at number three, would be Yokohama. Oh, I really like that one. That one's, like, that just struck the right chord for me. I don't know, like, yeah, I really liked Yokohama, and I know that was, like, from, you know, a previous year in a different country or whatever, but that would be number three. And actually, going all the way up to number one, which, this is where I'm throwing the curveball, it's not a Euro game. Do you have an idea what it would be?
Trying to think of some dexterity game, or that you've been playing.
Flames and Cosmos.
I don't know.
Inca and Marcus Brand. No.
Wait, that's Exit.
No. I think, right? Word Slam?
Oh! Oh, nice, yeah.
I know that came out to us
this year?
That came out to us this year. Oh. I don't know, like on BGG it's in 2016, but that would be my number one because, you know, and that, like, it doesn't feel right comparing it to all the other Euro games on the list, but, like, that just has worked so well for, you know, every different group that I played with. You know, and it's kind of taken that spot that Codenames had had been in for a while, of like a social word game that, you know, like a social game that I enjoy.
Way more energy than Codenames.
Yeah, but it's like a different, like, you know.
I'm just saying that's, that would bring people in quicker, because that's always the funny part with Codenames. I feel like I've used this shit like a thousand times, but Codenames like, okay, this is how you play, this is what you do, and this is what you do. And everybody's like, okay. And they're like, all right, let's start. And then they're like, are we playing now? And you're like, yeah, no, we're playing. What do I do? Just sit there.
Yeah.
Why? Oh, I need 3 minutes to look at the board. And halfway through the game, everybody's engaged. But that first, those first, like, five or 10 minutes, we're like, is this it? We just sit here? What do I do? What am I supposed to do? It's like, oh, just go grab a soda. What? That's the beginning of Codenames? Yeah, everybody just goes, takes a hike.
Yeah.
But Word Slam is Word Slam! Here we go! Like,
yeah. I guess, like,
brings in people fast.
Like, Codenames has that tension that, like, that strategy element.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, no, whereas this, like, Word Slam is more of that, like, charade sort of, like, you know, that sort of dynamic. And, like, those sort of games don't usually work well for me, where it's, like, you know, like, the ones that are trying to, like, push hilarity on the group, you know. But this one just has, like, maybe it's just because it's a little more subtle and it's not as, like, in-your-face about it. Like, it's just that back and forth with the teams. And the words that that are available to you, like, those make you think, like, they're giving you that creative side of it, but they're not being too over the top with, like, you need to be silly and you know, and just shouting out all these different guesses. It's just there's such a buzz to it. I know there was only like one dud game, but I don't even really count that one. Like, that Dice Tower Con, like, it feel like it fell over kind of flat. But that was like, I don't know if that was just like people weren't brought into it the right way. You
it
know,
was just a strange
event. If you can teach it well, like, if you can just hop right into it and get people going, like, just, you know, like, there's that energy that it brings. And I think it's, it's just such a great game that, you know, I don't know if I've played the game more. I've definitely done the activity more this year than anything else. You know, like, because it does turn into, like you are kind of keeping score, but not really. Like, it's really, like, I know in the rules it says, like, you know, deal out this number of cards, and you'll play until that's done. But play it, it's just draw a card, and we'll play until we don't want to play anymore.
It's kind of an activity more than a game, because somebody wins, but then you just move on, you don't keep score.
But I was listening to the Dice Tower podcast earlier, and they were talking about the 2013 games, and just hear, like, you know, Concept was great from that year. And I think that kind of has a similar sort of feel, but it's got more of the, you know, like, it definitely works better for that that team style thing with the energy. So
cool. Yeah. Well, that is your top 10 games, so sign yourself off. Top 14.
Yeah.
So sign yourself off, because I'm staying on the podcast. I've got more segments, but you can say goodbye.
Yeah, so I guess that's what I've got. I know it'll be changing. We've got a bunch of games to still play. I'm looking at a few right now. So, I don't know. We'll probably look at this again at some point, right?
Sure!
No, we won't look at this again, but it would be fun to look at it if stuff changes drastically.
When we go to put our votes in for Dice Tower Awards, we'll recap a bunch of stuff and see
we'll say why we were completely wrong.
We get to choose one Euro game in the strategy.
But, I definitely need to play these games and, you know, play some more. I guess now we're running into the 2018 games, right? Coming up.
Yeah.
So, always games. But, yeah, that's my list. And I'm Brian. I don't know what to say. Thank you.
Say bye.
Bye.
Alrighty, we are continuing with our 2017 recap. I am here with
Jonathan Roth.
And
that's how you fill out a voicemail, right? Like, yeah. Jonathan Roth. What's up, guys? How you doing?
He's the manager at the portal, and he's just going to recap 2017. So, John, how was 2017 as a year for the portal?
2017, I feel, was a bit more exciting than 2016. I think we saw some unique, interesting releases this year. You know, you saw kind of a paradigm shift across the board of what people were playing. Lots of new faces, different styles of games that perhaps hadn't been as popular in the past. So all in all, it was pretty busy, pretty exciting. Christmas was a buzz as usual, and you know, now we're kind of getting into early January 2018. There's just so many new things on the horizon already for this year. So kind of piggybacking off of 2017. And I think all in all, it was a better year for, you know, not gaming in general, but even just for the store, because there was actually exciting releases. I can't remember really anything that was like super crazy back in 2016. But there was definitely some really cool releases this year.
I feel like there was a lot of big events at the store, and not only new ones, but repeat events that really, like, now we had, I mean, you guys more than me, but I helped out with some of them, really had our feet wet on how to do things, like auctions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It went a lot smoother. How did you feel about the events this year?
No, I concur with that. I think Extra Life, we did an incredible, I can't talk today, I apologize.
That's fine.
It was way above and beyond what we did last year. Those guys were floored. I think the auction was, you know, like you said, very refined. It was something that we had experimented for in a different situation, and it ran really well this time, and we were able to generate a lot of extra donations, if you will, for that organization. It seemed like a lot more people were participating, and a lot more people were going the full 24-hour stretch. Some other events, like my GT for 40K, has been kind of lackluster, and I think that had to do with 7th edition, but we actually hit the number where we actually had a registered ITC GT this year, which is humongous for the store. So, you know, the first day we're kind of some hole in the wall in Connecticut and 18 people are watching. The next day we streamed it, there was 247 people watching
it
once we hit that magic number.
Yeah.
And that is good for that group too, because that gains a lot of notoriety and we'll continue to grow that group.
When you're talking 7th edition there, so 40K switched over from 7th edition to 8th edition, correct?
Yeah, and I think that has been the grand slam of 2017.
Yeah.
That game has progressed phenomenally. People are having fun with it again. there's tons of crazy cool models coming out, lots of micro games from them and stuff too. That company seems to really have gotten their stuff together and are going in a direction where they're more community oriented and kind of leaving that 1980s British mentality behind of,
yeah,
you know. So that helped really boost our attendance for those events. Miniatures are doing kind of poorly as a whole, but 40K is up by 266% from last year. So yeah, I think a lot, the general consensus is remarkably positive on that.
Yeah, and I think what you're speaking there too, like, right, the company was kind of doing some crazy stuff that kept people away, but everybody knows that those, like, for the most part, GW is the best miniatures around, and when they get their act together, make a quality game and a quality product, and don't, you know, jerk people around, I think people are ready to jump on board. Oh, what you're seeing.
I concur. You know, they had a major switch in leadership where they fired their CEO and brought somebody else in. And they had been running the company under this, like, very old school methodology of, like, they seriously ran their business like they did 20 years ago, where there was no other competition.
Right.
Right? Miniatures were pretty much 40K and fantasy. And that really does not work in this day and age. So the new guy came in and, you know, kind of tried to button up Age of Sigmar. That game's still kind of eh, but it's getting there. Pushed out a really great edition for 40K, pushed out Necromunda, Shadespire, a bunch of these other games, started having a presence at cons in major tournaments. They, you know, they really started, they opened up all their Facebook and social media, started communicating with people. They actually take people's considerations into context as far as FAQing things based on popular consumer beliefs and stuff, which I think is a living rule set. You know, the rule book goes, Brant, from 200 pages down to 8.
Yeah.
It's genius. And I think it's really accessible. I think they modified their pricing structure around the whole, there's a multi-tiered entry platform, which is necessary for games in this, this day and age, I think, particularly with something as expansive as miniatures. So their reopening of all their Facebook pages and all the Warhammer community pages and all that stuff has really done them wonders. And also having a presence at like Gen Con, Adepticon, Toy Fair, stuff like that. You know, people want to talk to the vendors. They want to they want to see who's doing what. So I think it's really cool.
Well, and even retail wants to talk to vendors. You know, it's not even just customers. It's retail wants to talk.
You're right.
Say, this is our. This is what's working for us. This isn't what's working for us.
Yeah. Take something like the Scythe expansion. You know months in advance that that's coming and how it's going to change that game. You go, cool, they're coming out with like a legacy campaign expansion. Games Workshop, where they still need to improve on, is people ask me what's coming out and when. I kind of have like maybe a week to 2 week window that, you know, I don't want to pull from the salt pile on the forums online and say, oh, it's coming out this week, because that has been relatively inconsistent. But they still have like this like no-tell policy where maybe you get a two to four week grace period of barely knowing anything that's going on. So I think there's still room for progress in that, because people don't like to be surprised anymore. People like to pre-plan. So, you know, sending, they do send demo copies and stuff, but it's so brief before. I can't get them built and painted and learn that game in that period of time. But, you know, I think that's one area for improvement, is they need to spoil things, if you will, farther out, because that's what people expect now. Yeah. People want to know what's coming. They want to know how to make preparations for it. And you know, I know board games and miniatures are drastically different, but I think the premise, all in all, should be the same.
Cool, so let's switch from store side. Maybe there's still some here, but just how about games you played this year that you thought were great, or games you saw in the store that were big hits? We obviously already talked about 8th edition of 40K.
Yeah.
What else did you see this year?
Yeah, obviously that was what I spent most of my time playing, was 8th 40K. Some of the games I've been playing this year have been a little bit more casual than what I have. Like, I found a lot of enjoyment out of some micro games this year.
Yeah.
Like Deep Sea Adventure is just a simple little push your luck game. It came off Kickstarter like a year or two ago, and there was this huge lag for when it hit retail. But that one's really fun. Brian got me into Sticky Chameleons, which I almost took an eye injury. As far as newer games, though, I mean, I've been playing Imperial Assault with the app. I think that can be considered a new game just because it's so drastically different, and I think they did a fantastic job on that. And Potion Explosion expansion came out this year, right? That was 2017, I believe.
Yeah.
And I play the crap out of that game now. That is probably my favorite board game now, is Potion Explosion. I think the expansion made it really, really fun, too.
Rebellion expansion. We played that.
Rebellion expansion was fantastic. Obviously, a lot of expansions this year.
Yeah,
I mean that's pretty much what I had more of a limited budget this year than the past, so sure. I've been adding things I already have. But like, the Mansions of Madness expansions have all been really good, and they've been doing a really good job of putting not only digital content but concrete through retail product out for that game too. So that's been a lot of fun. Drinking Flux, that's been a good one that came out this year that we've played a lot. Nice. I won't get into that too much for the store podcast.
Not at the store.
Not at the store, at home, obviously. I'm trying to think. What else have I picked up this year? Massive Darkness, I played that.
And Destiny.
Destiny.
Continues to roll. Actually, it's picking up because you've got tournaments now, yeah. Right?
Well, like, there was such product availability issues and there still is for everything through Fantasy Flight. And, I mean, I guess it's more conjecture or anything, but that's kind of a really pertinent thing to talk about, too, is a lot of our customers probably aren't aware that they signed an exclusive deal with Alliance distributors for 5 years.
Right.
That means no FFG product can hit the shelves at Barnes & Noble or Walmart or Southern Hobby, ACD.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And it was in an effort to get product out, and it really is not working. But finally, a year after launch, people were able to get Destiny product. And they're still having issues. Like the starter sets, they launched yesterday. They're sold out at a vendor level. Yeah. That shouldn't happen. But, that game's really taken off strongly. And I feel like, whether or not you like the new Star Wars movie, Star Wars is a juggernaut right now.
Yeah.
Destiny's been doing really well in the new set that just launched yesterday. So I guess that's off topic. But, yeah, Destiny did strengthen up over 2017, too.
Cool. And what are you looking forward to in 2018?
Oh, man, there's a lot. So we got a lot of new 40K armies. Like this weekend, the Nurgle release to start. Models are fantastic. There's also a 1,000 Sons and Custodes coming out. Star Wars Legion.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on the fence about that one. I think it could be really cool. It seems like it almost has like a bolt action-y kind of order activation system.
Yep.
And I always have been kind of not the strongest proponent of the Fantasy Flight Miniatures games. I don't like token and card management when I'm playing a miniatures game.
Right.
But it seems like it's very minimal in this one. Like you have like 10 cards and that's it. So I'm starting to become more excited the more they spoil. Like I just saw the Snow Troopers and General Veers. And that.
Even just the models though have to be right? Like who doesn't want a model of all these
things? Yeah, and they got weapon options and stuff and you can change them out. And I think that one's going to be a big one. I'm hoping Magic picks up a little bit of steam this year because it's been doing not that great. What the heck? I had a whole list the other day. And then when you put me on the spot, I can't remember any of them. But I had like a whole list of different. The draft set for Destiny.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be humongous, man. Yeah. So the Rival set, I believe, is dropping around the same time as Legion in February. And that is generating a lot of interest in the TCG crowd. Because, with four sets out now, and like I said, there was that lag, so there's a lot of people that didn't have access to the product that are now scrambling to pick it up. I think Limited's going to be really fun. And the way they did it is super cool.
Because there's
like that neutral kit where everybody gets a pool of the same cards and you draft as normal. But we have a lot of Magic players and stuff in particular saying, you know what, I'll give Destiny a try when draft comes out. Because it's an economical way to get your card collection up.
That's awesome, because I probably spent my first 2 years here like demoing games to Magic players.
Yeah.
And they would love the stuff I demo and then go back over and play Magic again and never really steer away, which is fine, right, as long as Magic is kind of cooking. But
I've seen that.
Want people to see other options. So
I've
really
seen that happen more so this past year than any year.
Yeah.
Not to talk negatively about something going on in the store, but I guess it's a healthy topic to talk about. A couple of years ago, we'd see 50, 60, 70 players for Standard on Friday nights. Now we get like 20 or 30.
Right.
And attendance is down worldwide for those events. And it's not like we don't see those customers. What I'm relieved to see is I look over and they're in the back room playing like Twilight Struggle or some of them migrated in the other room playing 40K. And I think that, in the past 5 or 6 years, before that, all the stores kind of did one thing. Like, you had your comic stores, you had your card stores, you had your Games Workshop stores. So these
baseball cards.
Yeah, like the Omnis and stuff like that. So now I think there's a lot more exposure to games where there's been some closings of a lot of the main just Magic stores.
Yeah.
And, people funnel into where the next vacancy is. And I think that a lot of people are starting to get exposure to all these different facets of gaming. And to me, it's kind of cool that people are opening up their interest level or the potential to be invested in other things. You know, because a lot of gamers now are not just doing one thing like they used to. Like, you know, you talked to me 6 years ago and the only game I played was Warhammer 40,000 or Fantasy. You know, now even myself, you know, I play tons of board games. I'm playing a card game. I'm playing miniatures still. And I see that, I think that's probably the thing that excited me the most about last year is I saw a lot of people becoming, you know, a little more cultured with what's going on with gaming and have a more diverse palette, I guess you can call it, to not sound silly. But, you know, they're trying more things.
No, I was actually just thinking this conversation is great, so we're going to have you on an episode soon. That's where we're going to talk about diverse palette of gaming. So I think that'll be awesome.
I think that's a great show. I think that there's a lot to talk about really after this past year with that.
So thank you.
Yeah, anytime.
Thanks for 2017. We're looking forward to 2018.
Yeah, my pleasure, and thank you to everybody that came in and made it such a great year.
All righty. Howdy, everybody. The Brent here, and I am with Gary from Late to the Table. Say hi, Gary.
Hey, Brent. How you guys doing? How's everyone doing today?
Awesome. Gary is also on Board Game Breakfast. You now have a segment called...
What to Check Out. It's basically, to sum it up, I basically suggest people to watch particular videos centered around board games or check out particular articles. I haven't suggested any articles yet. But I basically suggest interesting things to check out. I usually have a theme every single week, so... But
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you run us down with your top games of 2017?
All right. So I'll say this from the very beginning, though. My top 10 games from 2017, I know there's at least two games that I'm missing from this list just because I haven't played them yet and I own them. And I'm not going to ruin it yet, but I'll say it at the end. But number 10 for me is going to be Fog of Love from Jacob Jaskov. It's from Hush Hush Projects is the publisher. And this is the... only exclusive Walmart game that's out there, and it's a really interesting two-player game because the way it works is that there's not a ton of mechanics in it, but it's really cool how the whole role-playing aspect in the game works. But but that's my number 10, Fog of Love. Number 9 is Codenames Duet by Vlada Shivalto and Scott Eaton, and it's from Sheck Games. And I really like Codenames Duet. They literally perfectly made Codenames a two-player game, and they just... The way that they did it was actually very clever. I actually didn't think they could do it, but once I started playing it, I was like, oh yeah, they did a great job in this.
Yeah, it's a surprisingly different experience as opposed to like Disney, Marvel, Pictures, which is all just the same formula, rehash, but this one's actually a different
deal. And not only that, it's the Codenames that seems to work for people that don't like Codenames or the people that are sick of Codenames. They're like, oh, it actually revitalizes that for me.
Cool.
Number 8 is Clank in Space by Paul Denon and from Renegade Games. This one really surprised me because I literally thought it was just going to be a rehashed re-theme of Clank, and that was all it was going to be, and maybe a new map, and that's it. But they actually fixed a good amount of the problems that I had with Clank, even though it was those things where I didn't know it was a problem until I played Clank in Space, and then I realized that it was like, oh, wait, that is kind of a little bit of a problem. But yeah, Clank in Space did a great job with that, and I love that. It's one of my favorite deck builders of all time.
Cool.
7 is Werewords from Ted Alsbach and Bezier Games. Now, Werewords is up there just because I also really enjoy Insider a lot, but this is a gamier version of Insider, in which it's 20 questions with a soul seduction aspect into it. The thing that shot this up the list for me was just because the person who's giving the clues, who knows the word, I mean, could also be a werewolf, so and I like that. It's a great party game. I just wish it came in a smaller box. That's my only problem, even though it's still pretty small. Number 6 is Spirit Island from R. Eric Roos and published by Greater Than Games. This one will probably, I'll consider the surprise of the year.
Yeah.
Where going into it, I almost thought I wasn't going to like the game, and then after playing it, I was just like, wow. I don't know why, but I need to have this game, and I don't know why, but I still don't have this game. But no, Spirit Island's a great game. It's a little fiddly, but once you get past the whole fiddliness, it's a great co-op. It's like literally that co-op game that I feel like for people that don't like co-ops because they have to work too much together with everyone else, this is like the perfect, like, you're working with everyone else, but you're also doing your own little thing, kind of, and they did a really... It's
like I don't have the brain capacity to also control you.
Yeah, exactly.
I have enough controlling my own. I think more than fiddly, though, it's really a learning curve. Like, it's a bit fiddly, but like once you know what you're doing, it doesn't feel nearly as fiddly.
Yeah, I think also the fiddliness comes from if you want to add in the whole scenarios stuff. That's why I feel like you get really fiddly.
This is a surprise that it's on your list. Yeah, I didn't expect that.
I really like Spirit Island. Number five, The Fox in the Forest by Joshua Burgell and from Renegade Games. This one is surprising on my list because I've only played it a few times, but I love trick-taking games, and I can understand from the 2 to 3 times I played this game that it's going to be a game that's going to be in my collection and I'm going to be playing for a long time. I also am doing a top 10 portable games list for the 2017 on the Dice Tower channel. It hasn't been released yet because I've had to record that stupid thing 4 times now, but I finally got it right. But this one's getting, when I'm releasing that video, this is actually, spoilers, the number one top portable game in 2017 I'd considered. So Fox in the Forest, if you're looking for a great great trick take game that came out in 2017, it's, in my opinion, the best one, especially considering that's 2 players, which is rare.
It's one of the worst social deduction games of last year.
By far. I mean, have you ever played a good 2-player social deduction game? Someone needs to do that.
Marriage?
Yeah, right. That's actually probably Fog of Love, maybe a little bit there. So you're trying to figure out what the other person's doing. All right, so number 4, Kitchen Rush from Vangelis Bargriot and David Tursky. I murdered those names. From Artipia Games. Now, Kitchen Rush, I technically don't even own yet because I'm still waiting for my Kickstarter edition of it. But I did play it a pretty good amount while we're at PAX Unplugged, and it's up there. It's good enough. I liked it enough that it's up there at number 4. There's something about the whole rush of co-op, real-time games that are coming out that I'm just really loving, and I hope they keep doing it because it also reflects in my number 3, which is Magic Maze by Casper Lapps and Pegasus Spiel. These two are neck and neck in terms of being my favorite, but I think one of the reasons why Magic Maze is above it is because I played it so much more after playing a game. I played Magic Maze at least minimum 20 to 30 times this year so far, and the funny thing is I haven't even gotten past the 4th or 5th scenario, and I'm still loving it, and there's still 15 more scenarios or something like that, and it's an expansion that's actually out but hasn't been, gone to America yet, I think. But Magic Maze, I love it, the whole real-time aspect of it. It's a great game. I bring this out bar nights, and it somehow still works, so that says a lot for it. Number two is Guards of Atlantis from Artyom Nichiprov from Wolf Designia, or whatever. Now, Guards of Atlantis, once I saw the reviews for this game come out, I knew it was going to instantly be shoot up to one of my favorite games, possibly of all time. It's definitely up there. I'd go as far as to say if I had to make a list right now, it easily would be in the top 20, easily. Because Guards of Atlantis does, in my opinion, what it has done better than any other game to this date, and that's make a board game MMO game. And it does it perfectly. There's a whole bunch of characters in the game. They're making more expansions. I love this game so much that I'm even making my own expansions to this game. I'm already making League of Legends characters, so nice. It's a great game. If you're looking for a MOBA game that plays a lot of players very well, Guards of Atlantis is definitely that game for you. I actually have a bunch of friends that also play MOBA games and board games, and they all love this game just as much as I do. And the number one board game that came out in 2017, without a doubt, was Twilight Imperium 4 from Chris T. Peterson and Fantasy Flight Games. Yep. Gotta go with the stereotypical big game out there. But Twilight Imperium 4 definitely was my number one game. I love Twilight Imperium 3. Twilight Imperium 4 came out at a great time because I just started getting familiar with Twilight Imperium 3. Like, I think I played it twice, 2 or 3 times before this one came out. And as soon as 4 came out, I played this game, I think, 3 or 4 times already. I love Twilight Imperium 4. It's definitely one of those games where you got to spend a good half day on, but it's one of those games that is definitely worth it for every second that you're playing it. I've ran into only one person that thought this game was okay. And that's the thing. It's like, okay.
I feel like it crosses all barriers. Like, the biggest barrier of the game is, are you willing to sit and play for 6 to 10 hours?
And if you are, it's home run.
And it hits everybody. Yeah. Heavy gamers, light gamers, social gamers. It's got everything in there.
Yeah, it really does. And I mean, the best part about the best part about the game, though, is that there are many times when people are playing the game and they know they are so far away from winning the game, and there's no chance that they're going to come back and win this game, but they still play it anyways, and they still enjoy it because of the story.
Yeah.
The last game I played really quickly, Song was in dead last. They were nowhere near coming winning the game, except the entire game revolved around them because they were literally the War Sun. They weren't the War Sun characters, but they were the guys with the War Sun. They were the guy with the biggest army, and if you basically crossed their path, you was going to lose.
Right.
So this guy was in dead last, but he was basically dictating everything that was on the board, which was crazy. So it's like, that doesn't really happen in a lot of games nowadays where people are playing and they're in dead last and they're still highly affecting the game, highly involved in the game and what's going on, and Twilight Imperium 4 does that in spades. So, but yeah, that's my number one pick of 2017 by far is Twilight Imperium 4.
Awesome. Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, thanks, Brett, for having me.
Good list.
Thanks.
Okay, howdy, everybody. Welcome to our last segment. I am the Brant, and with me for this final part of our top tens of 2017 is
Kathy.
Awesome. And we're going to give you our top tens of the year to finish out here. So, Kath, is there anything from your list unique or different or that you want people to know or how you made your list or anything like that?
Sure. So, there were a lot of games that I played just once this year that I feel like would have possibly been on this list had I played them a few more times. So it was a little difficult. Clans of Caledonia, for example, if I'd played that in the light, I might have ranked it higher.
That's right. We played it when we had no power.
We had no power. So yeah, stuff like that. And I might have one or two games on my list that didn't come out this year, but that I played for the first time this year.
Nice.
So there's that.
I actually ended up every single game on my list I played more than once. So I didn't end up with that. It was a good year. If I tracked games I played a lot of new games and a lot of games a lot of times. I planned a lot of game nights. I went to a lot of conventions. I really probably played the most I've ever played this year. I feel like when I listen and consume all the media, like I have opinions on the games they're already talking about because I've played them or seen significant amounts of them or whatnot. Yeah. So there was that. All right, let's kick it off with your number 10.
All right. Again, I'm not good at really ordering, so this is not a hard and fast number 10, but, I put Heart of Crown as my number 10. I really liked the game, I liked the art, it reminded me a lot of Dominion, which is another game that I like. Yeah, it was just fun. We played it quite a few times, and it never felt like it was getting old or anything like that, so.
Nice.
Yep, Heart of Crown.
Cool, my number 10, I already cheated, because both of these games are really good, so I put them both at my number 10, because I just couldn't decide which should be my number 10. Alien Artifacts and Pulsar 2849. So they're both space-themed, so I put them there. Pulsar, mostly, I just have two plays now. Alien Artifacts, I have a lot of plays, so I probably should be able to tell. But I really like them both, and I don't know where Pulsar is going to work out. I feel like Pulsars would beat out Alien Artifacts, because I think I taught Alien Artifacts, like, 9 times at PAX, and then I've played it several times since. But yeah, I really like both of those games. Really neat, puzzly style, you know, work with your resources or the dice you draft or whatever. So those come in at my number 10.
All right. My number 9 is Century Spice Road. So this actually is one that I only played one time.
Oh, yeah?
I think so.
Ah, nice.
But I really liked it, and yeah, this was one I've been asking you to get back out so we could play again. So
Yeah, it's just tough. We don't carry it at the store because we don't have Plan B games, but we now have a Plan C to get Plan B games. So.
Well, there it is.
Nice. My number 9 is Heart of Crown.
Oh, look at that.
So this game's interesting because the few other people that I've played it with or let borrow it were just like, nah, it's okay. Like, there's not much more there, but I think it's great. Like, I think it's Dominion Plus. It's Dominion with a theme. I love that you, like, build up your deck and then have to deconstruct your deck.
Mm-hmm.
I love that element. But we just had a blast playing it. And, yeah, when I went back through, like, my BG Stats app, there was a period of time where we just played it, like, twice a day and then, like, every day for a week.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, no, that was definitely a really good game. That's one that, like, had I not been tracking and thinking of that, I might not have picked it. But I realized, yeah, no, this game was really fun. So, Heart of Crown. My number 9.
All right. My number 8 was Near and Far.
My number 8 was Near and Far.
Oh, look at that.
Near, far, wherever you are. You're not going to join me?
No.
All right. Why don't you talk about the game instead?
Yeah, that sounds good. I really enjoyed this game. We played it a whole bunch on vacation. And not again after, and I was left wondering why. 'Cause we liked it. Yeah. It was fun. It was different and enjoyable. I liked the theme.
Do you think that Zephyr would enjoy it if we played it with her? It would be too long with the reading, or do you think she'd get into that?
Well, it's hard to say. You never know with her.
I know.
It might get along with the reading.
We also, though, when we played the campaign, we played the, like, characters that it said, warning, these stories are a lot longer. Because there are some that are like, you know, you walk into a cave, there's something there, he offers you something. Yes, no. Like, right. Done, right? The story's gotcha. Very short. So there's still a story, but it's not, you know, a one page or half a page thing you have to read. So that might be... I mean, yeah. If we're saying the stories are interesting, then it's weird to be like, but they should be short, but it would keep the game a little shorter. So.
Right.
But no, that's definitely one we should try with her. Yeah, Near and Far is great. It's so good. It's just such a great mix of that story element, and you want to see what happens, and mechanisms that are just fun to maximize your points. If anything, my only negative with the game was it was too fast. It was always like, it's running out so quickly. You never felt that way?
Oh,
you felt like...
No, I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there are ways they say, oh, you could add more camps to have it go longer, or various other things like that. But, yeah, overall, it's just really fun, so we should play it more.
We should. I like it.
Cool. Well, that was my number 8, too, so go to your number 7.
All right, my number 7 was Fox in the Forest.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the art on this game. It was beautiful. This one I really like because back in the day I used to play bridge a whole bunch. And you need 4 people for bridge, and we were always trying to find... We kind of made up our own 2-player bridge version.
Yep.
Sort of-ish. And I feel like Fox in the Forest kind of is like that a little bit. So, I like it.
Cool. 2-player trick-taking game.
2-player trick-taking game.
There's another one that came out and get a chance to play called Claim. So maybe we'll have to track that down and try it out. But it's another 2-player.
Alright.
My number 7 was a huge game, Lisboa. You actually played this with me once. So I wonder, this is probably on your list of games you played once, and it was... You know, so big, you're like, oh, I don't remember. Did I like that or not?
Right? Yeah, actually.
Which is ironic, because some of the bigger games, like those bigger Euros, you're like, which one was that, and what did we do?
Exactly.
But I played Lisboa a whole bunch, including at table P1 on that Dice Tower Con. We were there playing for hours, and people were commenting, like, how long are they going to play this game? But Lisboa is my favorite Vital Lacerda game. Who's a great designer, lots of heavy games. People like a lot of his other games, but this one is hands down my favorite. Came out this year, and I think for a robust game, I think I played it 5 times. So, really enjoy that one. In fact, it's one of those ones that I keep, like, eyeing, and I'm like, I should put this on the table, because I know Kathy would enjoy playing this again and try it, but yeah, how many games are there like that? A ton.
Yeah.
My number seven, Lisboa.
All right. My number six is number nine. It's kind of it's a puzzly game. I like it. It was so different. You just have all these literal cardboard numbers.
Polyominoes.
Polyominoes?
Polyominoes, like dominoes.
Oh.
I guess.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so you had to stack them and figure out how to arrange them so that you can score the most points, but keep them in line the way they're supposed to. So that's really fun.
Super clever. My number six is Spirit Island. So this is probably the heaviest co-op game I've ever played. Has one of my favorite things, which is asymmetrical powers. So everybody plays a different spirit, nature spirit, and they're really cool because it's not just like, you're the water spirit. It's like, you are the water that moves, or something even more clever than that. Which creeps in the night, or something, you know. They give you really cool titles. So actually, this game is somewhat well known for being really hard, but I found with the number of times I've played it, which is now, like, including solo plays, like 15, the game is actually pretty easy. It's really hard at first. It puts you in a really hard spot, and then once you overcome that, it gets easier as the game goes.
Interesting.
There's a lot of modules in there to change it. You can have the Swedish invade and other things like that, and you can just change the level of difficulty. It gets a little bit fiddlier. But yeah, actually, after playing it that many times, I actually find that, like, it's like, this is really hard right now, but it's not going to make me lose the game, so I'll just fight through the hard part and get there. But you really build up a character, you get to make lots of choices, so Spirit Island is really fun. That's my number six.
All right. My number five is Gloomhaven.
Ooh.
I love how detailed it is. I love that there's all these different character boxes that we haven't even unlocked yet. I like the campaign. I just like how it works. I like the mechanisms. I like being able to create my own character and kind of learn it as I go, kind of thing. And get stronger. It's fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah. We've said a lot about Gloomhaven since we got it.
Yes.
Cool. My number five is Three Kingdoms Redux. You got to play about three quarters of this game. We didn't quite finish. So Three Kingdoms Redux is actually a reprint by Capstone this year of a game, and it's three warring races in, factions in China. And it's like a worker placement auction game, and you have all these unique generals that you play out on the board, and it's the Wu, the Shu, and the Wei, and you start in different positions, and you're working your way up, and it's a three-player only game, which makes it tricky, but it has like an alliance mechanism, the two kind of lowest players ally against the higher player, which is really neat, and that changes round to round, and it's a really good game. I really like it a lot. Hence my number five, Three Kingdoms Redux.
All right. My number four is Drop Mix.
Woo! Drop Mix! My number four.
All right. Mm. This game...
Activity,
yeah. It's definitely more of an activity than a game. It's super fun. And you just pull it out and you think you're going to just show it to somebody really quick, and then 45 minutes go by. And yeah, it's really fun. I enjoy it, and it's very exciting opening new packs and getting new songs. And
we may have way too many now.
We might have way too many.
Yeah, no, Drop Mix is so cool. The innovation on creating this and all that is amazingly awesome. And yeah, like, people say, like, oh, my favorite games are the ones that I would never refuse to play. And sometimes I'm like, well, that's true, but, like, if one of my favorite games takes 3 hours, but, like, Drop Mix is in that category. Like, if somebody just walked in right now and was like, you guys want to play Drop Mix? I'd be like, yeah, we're going to pause the recording. It really is just like, yeah, let's do it. In terms of that. So it's also my number four. Number three.
My number three is kind of... All right, so it's Charterstone. This is a game we've only played twice. So I feel like it's kind of high up on my list for having only played it twice. But I'm really excited to keep playing it, so that's why I think I put it so high. I feel like we haven't even gotten into the game yet.
Right.
Because we're still, like, getting new rules and everything. But I really like it. I'm enjoying it so far.
It's very quaint.
It's quaint. I love quaint. makes me happy.
We're going to slowly unpack it because we're playing with another couple.
Yes.
So it's like, you know, we play every other weekend at best.
Yeah.
A game, maybe at some point, you know, with kids being somewhere else, we'd play 2 games in a day.
But, yeah.
But it's only 12 games, so I mean, if you play it every other week, then, you know.
There you go.
It's half a year to knock it out. Awesome. My number three is the Exit series of games. And so this is kind of all the escape room puzzles and whatnot. And I've just really found that they rose above the rest for me. I like cutting and pasting and all the different things. And they also feel the most accessible to me. I definitely can get frustrated in some of them when I can't figure something out. Or I feel like it's like way outside the box. And this one never feels... like, they throw something at you. Like, they definitely think of unique things, but they're not so far out there that I've seen in others, or hidden so well, or hidden for no reason. one of the games we played, it was like, why is that even hidden? We weren't even thinking it was hidden. They made you think you had to do a totally different puzzle. We spent 30 minutes on a different puzzle, only to find out, like, oh, there's actually just something hidden in the picture that gives you the answer.
Right.
That was frustrating. But this doesn't do that. So I shouldn't talk about the negatives of other puzzles. Exit always feels accessible. It always feels like they're giving you clues through the words. Like I said, but still make you do unique things. So I think I've played 4 of them, and you've played 5. Because there's one you've played that I haven't now.
Oh, yeah.
And I played 4 of them, and I thought they were all excellent.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool. What's your number 2?
My number 2 is a game that didn't come out this year, but I played it for the first time this year, and it is Anomia.
Nice.
I guess, like you were saying, it's one of those games where if someone was like, do you want to play Anomia? I would say yes for sure. I really enjoy it. I like word games. I get into it. I like the competition of it and trying to think fast and seeing what comes out of your mouth. Anomia. I like that game.
So here's an interesting little tidbit for you. So I first saw Anomia at New York Toy Fair February of last year, and we are going to be representatives at New York Toy Fair 2018.
That is
on behalf of the Time Machine. We're going down
to
New York, to the Javits Center, and we're going to do that. So that's going to be a fun day for us. Yep. Brian's there like a whole half a week or whatever.
Right.
But we'll be there for a day, so we'll talk about what we saw there.
Cool.
My number 2 is Gaia Project. So Gaia Project is the new Terra Mystica. I basically put them on the same level. I'm probably going to play Gaia Project way more often because I actually don't own Terra Mystica, even though it's my favorite game of all time. But thanks to Kathy, I own Gaia Project. And I love it, and it has solo play, which is even more exciting. It's a really good solo, so that is my number 2 game of all time. But if that's, sorry, my number 2 game of 2017, but if that's my number 2, that means I liked something better this year, and if Terra Mystica was my former number 1 of all time, what has taken that slot? We'll have to find out.
There it is.
What's your number 1?
My number 1 is one that you already talked about, but the Exit series of games.
Yep.
I love those games. I love the puzzles. I love working together and trying to solve the problem. I like the pace of it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Like, somebody gets frustrated with a puzzle and puts it down, and somebody else picks it up and sees something that they didn't see before or whatever. Yeah, super, super fun. I like the exit games.
Cool. And my number one game of 2017, which is now also my favorite game of all time, Kathy already mentioned it, Gloomhaven. And it is set up in front of us right now when we finish recording. We're going to jump in and play. This is my new favorite game of all time. It's super deep. It kind of, in a way, reminds me of World of Warcraft, like the board game, or the Epic campaign, which we played. And now I don't have to pay a monthly fee. And Kathy made me this beautiful homemade insert for the game. So now we can set it up and take it down quickly. In fact, I've done that twice today. And this game is just amazing. It's interesting to me now that the second edition came out and people are playing it. And they're playing in groups of 3 and 4, and it's taking 2 and 3 hours, and they have a lot of rules questions. And you're seeing that, like I don't know, we just go with the flow. Like, I just kind of, like, come up with something if I'm not sure. Would this monster move here or there? And people want to know, like, exactly. Like, yeah. Oh, this hound would be blocked, and so it would only move one space and then attack for my... And we're just like, ah, what makes sense? Where would you go if you were this hound? And yeah. We kind of do it that way based on the card. And we keep going, and we usually play in 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
So I really feel like the people who are finding this to be the favorite game are solo and two-player, more than 3 and 4. So I'm interested in that. We've even talked about going to 2 characters each and haven't done it. You know, it seems nice because you could be leveling more characters, but, like, the time, right? The time sink of
maybe
if I just play 1 character at a time but get to more characters, that could be more exciting, so... Yeah, this is now my favorite game of all time, so I'm not sure what's happening in the universe. Tom Vassell, BGG, and The Brant all have the same number one game of all time. So
there it is.
Gloomhaven is amazing. People should definitely check it out. I have a couple honorable mentions.
Go for it.
So first off, I want to talk about One Deck Dungeon. This game's really good. I don't know that I could put it in my top 10, but I played the heck out of this game solo. All the time. I absolutely love One Deck Dungeon. So that would be my number 11. And then The Climbers is this, like, abstract blocks game. This is my favorite game to teach because people go, oh, I don't play dexterity games. And I'm like, it's not a dexterity game. They're like, what are you talking about? It's like Jenga. I'm like, no, this game's not Jenga. It's like a heavy strategy game. And they're like, no. Like, I don't want to do that. That looks silly. And I was like, no, trust me, it's going to be great. And then they play it, and they're like, this game is great, and people want to play it again. So that's just really been enjoyable. And then I was surprised this wasn't on your list, wasn't on mine either, Fog of Love.
Yes.
Fog of Love is excellent. We enjoy that game. To me, it's like that perfect amount of storytelling. Because, you know, I don't mind, like, if I'm full-on RPG, have a character, all that stuff. But I don't really need to do that. Like,
yeah.
And this one's fun that we just come up with the things to say. Although you were teasing me the last time we played, like, you are improvising way beyond what the card says. So I guess I do like some of that element. But Fog of Love's really, really good. And I'm sad that it didn't make my top 10 because I'm really enjoying it. But we have so much more content to play in there. So that'll be exciting.
Yep.
Cool. Thanks, Kat.
Sure.
You looking forward to 2018?
See what happens.
See what other games we get. VonnerCon. This is like VonnerCon 4 or something.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So, should be good. And lots of other conventions and things. But first, we'll be going to New York Toy Fair. So, we will let you know all about that. I think that's it. Let's sign off.
All right.
So, until next time, I am your host, The Brant. And with me is...
Kathy.
And we hope you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on January 11th, 2018. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. And thanks for listening.